Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
Hey, this is part 2 of a 2-parter on Louis and Auguste Lumière, two brothers who contributed significantly to the motion picture industry before there even was a motion picture industry. That's what they're mostly famous for, but they went on to do some other things, which is largely what we're talking about today. But if you have not listened to part 1, we highly recommend you do so. Otherwise, you're probably going to be lost.
Yeah, we have two-parters sometimes that each part can stand on their own, but that would be harder with this one.
Yeah, this is definitely a continuation of right where we left off. So last time, we ended at the point where the Lumières had developed a camera that could capture, process, and project motion pictures, and they had trained a group of employees to use this new technology so they could travel around Europe, showing off this marvel of innovation and taking new movies.
Right. So, it wasn't long before the brothers were sending their trained cameramen farther and farther afield, going outside of Europe. Because the cinematograph was relatively compact and light, it was pretty easy to expand their filming and demonstration presence all across the globe. They sent teams to India, Great Britain, Canada, and Argentina. And these were not small numbers of cameramen. In the United States alone, the Lumières had almost 24 of their men doing what they had been doing in Europe by the late 1890s.
Yeah, so they were just taking these movies, showing them to people. And some of these staff members were actually sent abroad as part of deals with businessmen in foreign countries. So as part of these contracts, the Lumières would basically loan out their camera, but the partner business would have to pay a Lumière company staff member as a contractor to actually use the camera. So it was like, you can have it come to where you are and take films, but you can't use it. Only our trained cameramen can use it. And then the partner business could then stage their own screenings of these films that were taken, and the revenue from those screenings would be split 50-50 between the business that was renting the camera and paying for the cameraman and the Lumière company.
Eventually, this whole partnership system became too unwieldy to manage, so the Lumières finally started selling the cameras outright. Starting in May 1897, the cameras and film were sold first to businesses and then to anyone who wanted them. The Lumières also began publishing a catalog of all the films they had to offer for purchase, so anyone could start their own entertainment business by showing these short films.
Yeah, you could basically say you had a big space. I would like to get
a cinematograph and order the following 10 films or whatever, and then you could charge people admission, and voila, you had your own movie theater running. In some demonstrations abroad in the early days of this, the company actually experimented with presentation style, and so they hired speakers to stand to the side of the screen and explain to audiences what they were seeing, but it was immediately evident that that was just silly and the explainer was extraneous. Like, no one really needed to be told, and a train is coming at you.
A baby is being fed here.
Right? Especially when you consider how basic their titles were. The workers leaving a factory. So here are the workers leaving the factory.
Just as their fame had spread in Europe, in the United States, the Lumières were heralded as geniuses. The slates of films that were shown at any given screening were a combination of movies featuring local and international scenes, and that menu proved to be the perfect balance to delight and excite viewers.
But as you can also imagine, a French firm stealing the thunder of someone like Edison and his kinetoscope in Edison's own home country was problematic. And there was also this growing sentiment in the United States that American innovation should be prioritized.
As we know from the War of the Currents, Edison was not timid in going after his rivals. He started a campaign to discredit the work of the Lumières while promoting his own motion picture technology. Edison had bought the rights to the Phantoscope projectors from Francis Jenkins and Thomas Armat and was working on his own film screenings. It's actually a whole patent story between Jenkins, who invented the Phantoscope, and Armat, who financed it, but that is really a tale for another day, as is the entire War of the Currents.
Yeah, which has been touched on before previous host.
Yeah, there's a two-parter in it. I think it's a two-parter.
Yeah. But the bottom line here is that the Lumières agents in the United States started to experience one problem after another as they attempted to continue touring, because Edison's sort of smear campaign was really quite successful. So eventually customs officials started claiming that the French cameras had been brought into the country without proper documentation. And at one point, one of the Lumières cameramen was actually jailed on a charge of filming without a permit.
As the climate of the United States grew increasingly unwelcoming for the Lumières cameramen, the company finally decided to halt all efforts in North America in late 1897, and it was, to some degree, beginning of the end of the Lumières' work in film.
They did make a few more movies. In 1898, they actually had more than 1,400 different movies in their catalog, most of which had been shot by those traveling cameramen that they had trained. And for the next 2 years, they did continue to work on developing and refining film technology, but that part of their business was no longer really growing and, in fact, was kind of shrinking. They were shooting fewer and fewer films each year.
The last big demonstration the Lumières made in motion pictures was at the 1900 Exposition Universelle in Paris. That's come up pretty frequently on the podcast. Lumières were featured as part of the expo, and they had a screening there. As part of their screening, which featured a mix of footage shot there at the expo and films their team had made traveling through Mexico, they also debuted a new large-scale screen. The Library of Congress has digitized master edit of much of this footage online, and we'll link to it in our show notes. Heads up, there are some movies in this group that feature activities that could definitely be considered animal cruelty.
Yeah, there's some cockfighting in there, and there are some horses being treated sort of poorly. So if that is stuff that is not for you, maybe don't look at these ones. But you can look at their other earlier films,
and which also include lots of spanking, as a reminder.
Right.
Which
I will say though is some of the least aggressive spanking I've ever seen. So if you're worried about seeing someone get hit, it's definitely very much on the mild side. After that Paris Expo, both Louis and Auguste turned back to photography to some degree. So throughout their foray into motion pictures, their family business had continued to run and to thrive. It was still funding all of these little expenditures to train people and send them abroad, and also for them to experiment and try new things. And as you recall, the motion picture work that they did was really intended as a way to sell new cameras and film that then turned into this temporary foray into movie production. They never intended to be a film studio, but they were for a brief period of time. And by 1900, competition in the motion picture space was only getting more intense, and the brothers just wanted to move on to other things.
The Lumieres soon began to work on other projects outside of motion pictures, and that is what we'll talk about in a moment. But first, we're going to pause for a quick sponsor break.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
So, the same year of the Paris Expo, but at the end of the year, on December 29th, 1900, Louis filed another patent. This time it was for a device called a photorama. And this was a method for taking full 360-degree still panoramic photos in one long exposure. And these panoramic images were intended to be projected, but again, to be static.
Meanwhile, there was a long-desired achievement in still photography that the brothers had yet to crack.
So while the Lumieres had made millions thanks to their blue label plates, and they had captured incredible film of real life in motion pictures, one goal that had been kind of on their minds for quite a while had remained elusive, and that was creating a photographic process that could reproduce images of the world as they're truly seen with the human eye in full color.
Just as was true with motion pictures, they were not the only people working on this idea. And indeed, other innovators were trying their hand at color photography. Some were actually successful at creating color images, but the processes were really labor-intensive and cumbersome, so they weren't really viable. Photographers would either have to take three different exposures or use three different cameras and then composite the resulting images.
But on December 17th of 1903, the Lumieres applied for a patent on a color photography system that they called autochrome. On May 30th, 1904, they debuted it at the Académie des Sciences. And for the next several years, the brothers worked on refining their process before they finally presented it before the Paris Photo Club in 1907 to introduce it commercially.
Incidentally, 1907 was also the last year that the Lumieres published their catalog of films.
So surprisingly, perhaps, the key to the Lumieres' color photo system was potato starch. They dyed fine grains of starch in three colorways, a red-orange, a green, and a violet. And then these fine grains were combined and then applied in a fine layer to a glass plate. And I keep saying the word fine, but they were very, very fine. So there were 7,000 grains per square millimeter in their plate application. And then a sticky varnish of lamp black was used to fill in any spaces between the grains.
This plate was compressed with 7 tons of pressure per square centimeter. The plate was treated with a silver bromide emulsion. So when a photo was taken, the potato starch grains filtered out all the light but that which corresponded to the color it was dyed. This is ingenious. The light then passed through the grains onto the light-sensitive emulsion and created a glass transparency from which prints could be made. This made the autochrome system the first commercially successful color photography process.
This was a massive shift in the world of photography. For one, obviously, it made color work achievable. But for another, it completely changed the way photographers approached their work. The exposure that was needed for an autochrome image was a bit longer than a black and white image would require. It was longer than a second, I think. So most photographers primarily worked with still subjects initially. And also sometimes a yellow filter had to be used on the camera's lens when they were shooting outside in daylight because otherwise the blue sky was overwhelming. And so they had to balance that out with a little bit of yellow.
The new level of depth offered by autochrome also meant that photographers had to relearn their craft. Part of this learning curve was understanding and predicting what colors would actually be captured in the photographic process, because this really wasn't a system that faithfully captured true-to-life color. If you look at autochrome images, they have a pretty distinctive and recognizable color palette. But the images that resulted from photographers experimenting with this new medium were so uniquely beautiful that they caused concerns that painting would soon fall out of favor.
Yeah, we include one as part of our show art, but if you go looking around for autochrome images online, they are spectacularly beautiful. And you can see why there might have been a little bit of concern in the art world that their jobs were in jeopardy. But part of that concern for painters and their job security, it's interesting, actually came from the way that errors looked on autochrome photographs. So in instances where the subjects moved slightly during that slightly prolonged exposure period, it actually produced this really lush-looking painterly effect.
Autochrome became the standard in photography, and it remained so for more than two decades. In 1914, National Geographic printed its first color photo of a garden of blooming flowers taken in Belgium, and it was made using autochrome.
And it actually was not until the 1930s that other processes, such as Kodak's Kodachrome, supplanted autochrome. So just as the Lumieres motion picture cameras had offered a more portable option for creating films, Kodachrome was able to offer a more portable way for color photos to be made. So with autochrome, even though it had been a huge advancement, photographers still had to carry cases of glass plates, which could be a little bit cumbersome. But all a photographer needed to shoot Kodachrome was a small camera and their film. So it really was, again, another big step towards portability.
In the 1930s, as new color photography options were hitting the market, Louis once again turned to the cinema, this time to try to find a way to marry color with motion pictures. He exhibited this work at the Paris Exposition of 1937, but it was never developed into a commercial product. While the exact reason Lumiere's color motion picture process never went into production is not entirely known, World War II probably played a part.
Yeah, there is some speculation that had he been able to put this in production and take it around the globe as they had with their cinematograph, that he probably could have given Technicolor a run for its money. But in 1939, Louis was tapped to participate in what would have been the first Cannes Film Festival as its president. But once again, World War II was a problem. In late August, as the festival's September 1st date approached, Europe was in the grip of conflict. People had already begun arriving in Cannes on August 23rd when the German-Soviet non-aggression pact was signed. And that made it immediately clear that things were getting very unstable and that the event really could not proceed as planned. And by the time the festival was officially canceled on August 27th, pretty much everyone that had come into Cannes anticipating the festival had already left.
During the occupation of France by German troops, Louis Lumière moved from Lyon to Bandol. Under Philippe Pétain, who was Marshal of France at the time, Louis served as the science representative on Pétain's advisory council. He did not stay in this council for very long, though. He resigned and returned to Bandol.
And in his later years, Louis was given a multitude of honors for his contributions to photography and motion pictures. He was a member of the Institute of Optics, the National Office of Inventions, and the National Conservatory of Arts and Trades. He was made the honorary president of the French Chamber of Cinema and the president of the French Society of Physics. Louis Lumière died in Bandol on June 6, 1948.
Next up, we will talk about what Louis' brother Auguste worked on after the brothers transitioned away from the cinematograph, but not until we have one more quick word from a sponsor.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit-tested for all-day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
So while Louis had stayed in the family business, Auguste Lumière made a rather drastic career change in the early 1900s. He had always been interested in chemistry, and he was undoubtedly incredibly influential in the family business in that regard. Figuring out color photography almost certainly involved a lot of work on his part as well as his brother's. But what he was truly interested in was actually biochemistry.
So he started to study medicine. One of his efforts in the medical field that brought him acclaim was his interest in the healing process and developing new ways to treat wounds. During World War I, he examined the wounds of hundreds of injured men, and he also studied scarring and healing in dogs to further his research. We don't personally know the details of how these dogs were wounded, but...
And I do not want to.
No. Well, and medical experiments involving dogs were not uncommon at the time.
Mm-hmm. But he did use that research to really get a lot of information about how tissues would heal themselves. And in 1915, he applied his wound research to the development of a bandage called a tulle gras, which translates to oily gauze. And this sterile bandage was impregnated with Vaseline and balsam of Peru, so it wouldn't stick to wounds, though it was, of course, not absorbent. So if you also needed an absorbent bandage, you needed to have two. But tulle gras dressings are actually still used today. And Auguste also devoted a great deal of his time in medical research to colloidal solutions to disinfect wounds. So he really actually did have quite an impact on wound management.
From 1914 to 1953, Auguste Lumière wrote more than a dozen books based on his medical research, covering not only wounds and how to treat them, but also tuberculosis and cancer, among others. Auguste Lumière died 6 years after his younger brother on April 10, 1954, at his home in Lyon.
You'll often see a lot of comments in biographies or articles about the two of them that by the end of his life, people knew Auguste Lumière for his medical work, and they had often not made the connection that he was one of the Lumières that had worked in film,
because he was so completely ensconced in the medical community by that point.
And even though the Lumières abandoned motion pictures, they also inspired one of the first motion picture storytellers, Georges Méliès. And when the Lumières had demonstrated their films in Paris very early on, Méliès, who is a magician and a theater manager, had seen them. We're talking like in the 1895 period. And he was completely blown away by the possibilities that this new technology offered. And while the Lumières films were pretty basic and generally more on the documentary side, Méliès began to immediately dream of crafting fantastical tales that could be projected on screens.
He begged Auguste Lumière to sell him a cinematograph, but there was just no convincing the man to do it. Lumière told Méliès, "You should be grateful, since although my invention is not for sale, it would undoubtedly ruin you. It can be exploited for a certain time as a scientific curiosity, but apart from that, it has no commercial future whatsoever."
Oh, Auguste. I want, this is like that moment, you know how often people will ask us, like, if we do live shows and we do Q&A, if you could travel anywhere in time, where would you go? I think going forward, my answer has to change. And it is, I would go and I would scoop Auguste Lumière up and I would take him to 2017 and I would say, Rogue One made $1 billion. And then just watch him go, whoops. Yeah, of course, this happened before they had started offering the mass-produced cinematograph for sale. But it is interesting that initially he was just like, no, no, don't go into film. It's as a dead end. It offers some insight, this interaction, as to why the Lumières were not especially concerned with an ongoing business venture in motion pictures. They really thought they were going to get in, make a bunch of money in ticket sales while this idea was still a novelty, and then get out, which is what they did. But they abandoned a really lucrative business.
But of course, Méliès did get his hands on a camera, though not a Lumière camera. He started making films that really broke open the world of fictional narratives. While fictional stories had been told on film before through animated characters, Méliès was really the first one to tell fictional stories by filming actors. He made his first film, Playing Cards, in 1896, but it's Méliès's 1902 film Le Voyage de la Lune, or A Trip to the Moon, that remains one of the most famous pieces of early cinema. That's the one where the spaceship crashes into the eye of the moon.
Yeah, that's one of those pieces. And sometimes you'll actually see, I know I have a couple of times seen A Trip to the Moon, misaccredited to the Lumières and not Méliès. Sometimes that's been confused. I think most people that know anything about cinema will get it right.
Yeah.
I have definitely seen it listed incorrectly before.
I don't think I've seen it listed incorrectly, but I have heard people say it incorrectly.
Yeah. And of course, even though filmmaking technology has evolved significantly and the Lumière's inventions were replaced by others that improved on their capabilities, I love that we still unconsciously pay homage to the brothers and their father linguistically all the time. So the words cinema and cinematography, for example, harken back to that first cinematograph created in Lyon.
In 1982, the Lumière family home in Lyon became the Lumière Institute, focused on research and study of film. The Institute hosted a massive celebration in 1995 to commemorate the centennial of the Lumière's first film. The first prototype of the cinematograph is kept there, and the second prototype was donated to the National Conservatory of Arts and Crafts in 1942 by Louis Lumière.
Incidentally, the Lumière Institute is now on my list of places I want to visit because they have amazing programming all the time. Also in 1982, the same year that that home was made into the Lumière Institute, the Lumière Company, which was still going at that point, was purchased by the UK film manufacturer Ilford, and it was renamed Ilford France, although you will sometimes still see it listed in Ilford's business listings as the Lumière. I forget how they reference it, but the name Lumière is still attached sometimes.
In 1998, a new theater named the Lumière in honor of the brothers was built on the site of the original Lumière factory.
And today, there are Lumière archives of film and photographs all over the world, but one of the most impressive belongs to National Geographic. They have an archive that contains almost 15,000 glass plates of autochrome images, but 11,000 of those have never been published. So there's all this amazing photography that does not really get seen, but it is being carefully preserved because, as you can imagine, glass plate photography, kind of delicate.
Yeah. A lot of
glass plate photography made with potato starch.
Yeah. Well, a lot of photographic media are incredibly delicate. I got to go on a tour of the special collections at Harvard Business School's library earlier this year, and they had acquired the entire collection of, I think, Polaroid, and they've got stuff that is just like, this is remaining in this refrigerator forever. And if it is ever to be removed and examined, we are going to remove it and examine it and immediately put it back.
Like, right. Or remove it to a refrigerated room.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They have all the things where it's like, this is the safe place that we can open this and look at this. So, yeah, there's definitely stuff that it's like, if we don't preserve this continually, it will just degrade and not be visible anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's a case with a lot of Méliès' films as well. He made more than 400 films, but a lot of those are completely gone, never to be seen again. Thankfully, some of them have been preserved, which is why we all know about The Trip to the Moon, because that is one that made it through the ravages of time. I have some listener mail that I almost feel guilty in taking pleasure in.
Okay.
It's from our listener, John. It's about our Carl Tanzler episode.
Oh,
he writes, "Dear Tracy and Holly, first off, I'm a huge fan of your program, and I listen to it during most of my longer jogs. I am currently training for my first marathon. Congratulations, John. You're amazing. And I'm slowly increasing my miles, which means I get to listen to more of your histories as I run. I did hit a snag, though, thanks to the Carl Tanzler's Corpse Bride episode. I remember being very cavalier during your warning that there was going to be some very gross material coming and listener discretion should be advised. Thinking that I'm pretty desensitized to hearing gory details, I continued listening. Huge mistake. The overall awful actions by Carl Tanzler made me angry, which forced me to run faster than I probably should have, and this caused me to be more exhausted than normal. By the time you were describing Mr. Tanzler's process of removing mold from poor Maria, I was nearing the end of my run. Hearing the gruesome details coupled with my exhaustion made it almost too much to bear. Not wanting to stop, I tried to focus on my run, but that super focusing meant I was also super focused on the horrible nature of Tanzler's deeds. Miraculously, I managed to keep my stomach in check, and I did finish the run successfully, but I'm sure I freaked out a few other runners with my occasional shiver and the increasingly pained and disgusted look on my face. From here on, I will pay attention to any warnings that come with future podcasts and may hold off on listening to them for less stressful times. Thank you again. Oh, John, I'm so sorry, but that did make me laugh, mostly because you're a good storyteller, not because you got sick.
No.
The Tansler one is super gross, but I also just wanted to say, yay, John, training for a marathon is so much work, and I applaud anyone that does it. I have gotten progressively more lazier with my own running, barely do it anymore. Work and life are just a little too busy right now to put in long-term training time. But if you would like to write to us about any episode that made you sick to your stomach or anything else, you don't have to have been sick to your stomach to write us. Just say hi. You could do so at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can also find us on social media pretty much everywhere as Missed in History. And you can also come to our website, which is missedinhistory.com, where you can find every episode of the show that has ever existed. And for the ones that Tracy and I have worked on, we include our sources and some show notes on occasion. You can also find all kinds of other goodies at our website. So come and do that at missedinhistory.com, and we'll see you there.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.